Chapter 126. Nothing should be of importance, where she was of no importance, an angry feeling toward another woman who possessed the good she wanted. But what notion, what vain reliance could it be that had lain darkly within her, and was now burning itself in two sight as disappointment and jealousy? It was as if her soul had been steeped in poisonous passion by forgotten dreams of deep sleep, and now flamed out in this unaccountable misery. For with her waking reason as he had never entertained, what seemed the wildly unfitting thought, that Deronda could love her. The uneasiness as he had felt before had been comparatively vague, and easily explained as part of a general regret, that he was only a visitant in her, and her brother's world, from which the world where his home lay, was as different as a portico with lights and lackeys was different from the door of a tent, where the only splendor came from the mysterious inaccessible stars. But her feeling was no longer vague. The cause of her pain, the image of Mrs. Grandcourt by Deronda's side, drawing him farther and farther into the distance, was as definite as pincers on her flesh. In the psyche mold of Mira's frame there rested a fervid quality of emotion, sometimes rashly supposed to require the bulk of a Cleopatra. Her impressions had the thoroughness and tenacity that give to the first selection of passionate feeling the character of a lifelong faithfulness. And now a selection had declared itself, which gave love a cruel heart of jealousy. As he had been used to a strong repugnance toward certain objects that surrounded her, and to walk inwardly aloof from them, while they touched her sense. And now her repugnance concentrated itself on Mrs. Grandcourt, of whom she involuntarily conceived more evil than she knew. I could bear everything that used to be, but this is worse, I used not to have horrible feelings, said the poor child in a loud whisper to her pillow. Strange that she should have to pray against any feeling which concerned Deronda. But this conclusion had been reached through an evening spent in attending to Mordecai, whose exaltation of spirit in the prospect of seeing his friend again, disposed him to utter many thoughts aloud to Mira, though such communication was often interrupted by intervals apparently filled with an inward utterance that animated his eyes, and gave an occasional silent action to his lips. One thought especially occupied him. "Seest thou, Mira," he said once, after a long silence, "the Shema, wherein we briefly confess the divine unity, is the chief devotional exercise of the Hebrew, and this made our religion the fundamental religion for the whole world, for the divine unity embraced as its consequence the ultimate unity of mankind. See, then, the nation which has been scoffed at for its separateness, has given a binding theory to the human race. Now, in complete unity a part possesses the whole as the whole possesses every part. And in this way human life is tending toward the image of the supreme unity. For as our life becomes more spiritual by capacity of thought, and joy there, possession tends to become more universal, being independent of gross material contact, so that in a brief day the soul of man may know in fuller volume the good which has been and is, nay, is to come, than all he could possess in a whole life, where he had to follow the creeping paths of the senses. In this moment, my sister, I hold the joy of another's future within me. A future which these eyes will not see, and which my spirit may not then recognize as mine. I recognize it now, and love it so, that I can lay down this poor life upon its altar and say, burn, burn indiscernibly into that which shall be, which is my love and not me. Apostrophe, apostrophe, dost thou understand, Mira? A little, said Mira, faintly, but my mind is too poor to have felt it. And yet, said Mordecai, rather insistently, women are specially framed for the love which feels possession in renouncing, and is thus a fit image of what I mean. Somewhere in the later Midrash, I think, is the story of a Jewish maiden who loved a Gentile king so well, that this was what she did. She entered into prison and changed clothes with the woman who was beloved by the king, that she might deliver that woman from death, by dying in her stead, and leave the king, to be happy in his love which was not for her. This is the surpassing love, that loses self in the object of love. No, Ezra, no, said Mira, with low-toned intensity. That was not it. She wanted the king, when she was dead, to know what else he had done, and feel that she was better than the other. It was her strong self, wanting to conquer, that made her die. Mordecai was silent a little, and then argued, that might be Mira. But if she acted so, believing the king would never know. You can make the story so in your mind, Ezra, because you are great, and like to fancy the greatest that could be. But I think it was not really like that. The Jewish girl must have had jealousy in her heart, and she wanted somehow to have the first place in the king's mind. That is what she would die for. My sister, thou hast read too many plays, where the writers delight in showing the human passions as indwelling demons, unmixed with the relenting and devout elements of the soul. Thou judgest by the plays, and not by thy own heart, which is like our mother's. Mira made no answer. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.